500 years ago, the city of Bath was a very different sort of place to the one it is today. It was much, much smaller. The houses all huddled together within the city walls. Most of the streets were very narrow. Most of the houses were very small. There were no cars and no buses. It was a very different sort of place. But just as today, people came from all over to visit Bath. Traders would set up little wooden stalls in the markets or simply spread their wares out upon the ground. And all day long, the streets would be teeming. Merchants and peddlers and peasants and farmers buying and selling everything imaginable. Sometimes it was so busy, you could barely move. But there was one man who didn't mind the crowds at all. In fact, the more crowded the streets were, the happier he was. For he was a master thief. And he was so skilled at his work that nothing, but nothing, was safe from him. He could steal the ring from your finger just by shaking your hand. He could steal your wallet just from bumping into you. He could probably steal the shoes from your feet and you wouldn't even know about it. He was a living master of his trade. Some days he'd work down Cheap Street, some days he'd work down Stall Street, some days he'd work down Westgate Street, but every day he'd come home with his pockets full of other people's gold. Ah, it was a good life. He worked when he felt like it, and he lived like a prince. But as he got older, something happened to him that seems to happen to everybody before too long. He became slowly but surely more and more discontent, dissatisfied, unhappy with his lot and his life, and he'd catch himself thinking things like, I can't go on like this forever. It's a good job, this nicking. It's well paid, so to speak, but it's lonely work. I don't want to be an old man still living alone, working alone. I'd like me someone special. Someone I can spend my time with, share my life with. Someone I can love and grow old with. And I'd like me children. Little girls and boys that I can sit on my knee, teach them everything they need to know. Raise them up to be thieves just like their father. And so it was that some days when he'd be working the markets, he wouldn't just be looking for things to steal. He'd also be searching the crowd with his eyes, always looking for that someone special. But all the women looked so much alike to him, and every day he'd go home empty-hearted, despairing of whether he'd ever find himself a wife. But then, one day, he saw a woman he'd never seen before. She had long brown hair that hung all the way down to her waist, and the way she walked, it was more like dancing, slipping in and out of the crowd like a cat. She wore a long gypsy dress of tassels and coloured silks, and she looked so fine that every head would turn to follow her. Each person she passed would catch the fragrance of her perfume, would feel the brush of her hair against their shoulder and the touch of her hand against their pocket. And the master thief could not take his eyes off her. He was like a man enchanted, and the more he gazed, the more it seemed like she was walking straight towards him, and the more it seemed like her eyes were gazing back into his. Felt the brush of her hair against his shoulder and the touch of her hand against his pocket as she swept past him and was gone. And as he turned and looked, he saw her disappearing into the crowd without so much as a glance back at him. And then he realized she hadn't even noticed him. To her, he was just another face in the crowd. And he got that horrible feeling you get when you see something wonderful and you know it's not for you. A sort of sinking in the stomach.
Oh, come on! Pull yourself together! She was too fine for the likes of you. You'll find someone else. Go get yourself a drink.
And so he went to the tavern, and there he ordered a pint of the strongest beer in the house in which to drown his sorrows. But when he put his hand in his pocket to reach for his wallet, he found, to his great surprise, that his pocket was empty. He tried the other side. Empty. He looked in his back pockets, his front pockets. He looked under his hat, in his socks. But no. There was no doubt about it. I don't believe this. I've been robbed.
Me, of all people, robbed. Now who in heaven's name would have the cheek to come up and...
Then she's a thief. Then she's just like me. Oh, I'm in love. And with that, he threw his beer in the air and ran down the street after her, bumping into people, knocking down stalls, following that bobbing head of brown hair, dancing down the road. Finally, he caught up with her. He found her standing at a hat store, buying the most expensive hat there, all sable and fox fur. And she was paying for this hat with gold coins that she was shaking from a wallet that the master thief knew very well. Very well indeed.
"That's my wallet!" he yelled.
And she just stopped and slowly put the money back in the wallet, and she turned around real slow and looked straight at him, sparks in her eyes.
"Are you accusing me, sir? Me, a respectable woman, of stealing your wallet? I wouldn't be so low. How dare you accuse me in front of all these people?"
And he just ran up to her and he grabbed her by the arm and he whispered,
"Look, I don't care about the wallet. You can keep the wallet for all I care. It's just I wanted to tell you. You and I, we're in the same game. Same trade. And you're good. You're very, very good. In fact, you're almost as good as me. And just think, what a tragedy it would be if such talented people as ourselves were to have no children to pass our skills on to. And just imagine, your skills, my skills, put them together, and you've got a thief the like of which the world has never known before. What are you doing tonight?"
Well, she just looked at him. What else could she do? And she said, well, nothing really. "Well, will you come out for a drink then, with me?" "Well, are you paying?"
"If you give me my wallet back, yes."
Well, at that she burst out laughing. She handed back the wallet and said with a smile that she would see him at the tavern that evening. It would be no exaggeration to say that they had a wonderful evening together. You see, never before had they really been able to talk about what they did, because neither of them had ever met another thief before. All night they sat and shared secrets, told stories of near misses and close shaves and, well, if truth be told, he did slightly exaggerate some of his stories, but then she probably did too. When they parted, he was going to ask her for a kiss, but thought better of it. He was, after all, a gentleman. Nonetheless, he went home that night, walking on air. Well, the next day word travelled that a storyteller had come to town, and so that evening they went to hear him.
The master thief slipped the old traveller a few coins, and all night he told the most wonderful stories of love and romance, of handsome princes and beautiful princesses, of heaven-made matches and love at first sight. And as each story ended in happily ever after, the master thief would glance over in her direction. And although she didn't look back at him, she couldn't help herself smiling and blushing just a little. Well, the next day he sent her 12 red roses, red for love. And the next day he sent her a long love poem, all about how wonderful she was, and oh, the bridge of her nose, and oh, the nape of her neck, and oh, how clever she was, and how funny her jokes were, and on like this, like it never might stop. And she loved every single word of it, hoped that he never would stop. And with each passing day, she grew more and more fond of him, until finally, when he said, "Would you marry me?" She said, "Yeah, all right." And so they were married. Well, before long, she announced that she would soon be having a baby, and the master thief was beside himself with happiness, declaring that this child would be a thief the like of which the world had never seen before. Soon he was counting the months, then the weeks, and then the days, until at last one evening she said she thought the baby was on its way, and he sent a neighbour's boy running to fetch the midwife. Before long there was a clatter of hooves outside, and the midwife arrived. But the very moment that the master thief opened the door and caught sight of her, his heart skipped a beat. Something inside him started itching, and he just stood there staring at her with his fingers twitching. For she was wearing a long brown sable coat, and he started thinking, "I could just say, 'Oh, hello, midwife, thank you for coming so soon. I'll just take your coat, shall I? It's nice and warm in here.' And then I could take it and stick it in the cellar, and she'd be so tired after the birth she'd completely forget about it." And then he saw that around her neck she wore a thin silver necklace. And he started thinking, "Oh, I could just say, 'Oh, midwife, you won't be wanting to wear that necklace while you're delivering the baby. You never know what it might get tangled up with.' And then I could take it and hide it in a little box, and she'd completely forget about it." And then he saw that upon her wedding finger she wore a beautiful golden ring with 8 tiny emeralds all the way round. And he started thinking, "I could just shake her hand and slip that ring from her finger. She wouldn't even notice." And then he realised what he was doing. "For goodness sake, she's come to deliver your first child. Will you please keep your hands to yourself for once?" And so he said, "Oh, hello, midwife. Thank you for coming." And he shook her hand, but he didn't take the ring. He took her coat and he placed it by the door where she'd see it on the way out. And he placed her necklace on top of the coat and said, "My wife is next door. You can go through now." All that evening he sat in the kitchen and he waited and he waited. What else could he do? All through the night he sat there worrying and biting his nails, until finally, as dawn was breaking and the birds outside were beginning to sing, he heard quite the most beautiful sound he had ever heard in his life. And he leapt to his feet and he cried, "Oh, I'm a father! Oh, thank you, God! Thank you, God!" And he rushed to the bedroom, he threw the door open, he ran to the bed, and there sat his wife, oh, cradling in her arms the most beautiful baby girl you ever saw. And he was so proud and happy that he could have laughed and cried at the same time. But then he noticed one of the baby's arms was curled up tight against her body, and her little hand was clenched up into a tight, tight fist. And when he tried to prise open the tiny fist, he found it was as solid as a rock. When he tried to move the arm, he found it was as stiff as a rod.
"What is this?" "I've no idea," said the midwife. "I've never seen anything like it in all my life. There's nothing I can do about it."
"But how can she be a thief with her arm like this?"
"Oh, this is punishment for all that nicking I ever done. Oh, my poor baby girl. My poor baby girl."
And his wife said, "Calm down, for goodness sake. We can take her to a doctor. We'll go to the most expensive one in London. I'm sure he'll be able to do something." And he said, "Really?" And she said, "Yes, I'm sure of it. We'll go tomorrow." And so they did. But 500 years ago, the journey from Bath to London was far from easy. It took over a week by horse and cart, bumping down the muddy tracks that in those days they called roads. But when finally they arrived, they found themselves in a thieves' paradise. Well, London then, like Bath, was a good deal smaller than it is today, but it was still the place where all the richest people lived, and our two thieves had a field day. They worked down Pudding Lane, they worked down Threadneedle Street, nicking and nicking to their heart's content, and at the end of the day they had a great pile of wallets and purses, enough to be able to afford 15 minutes of the time of the most expensive doctor in London. And when finally they got to see him and placed their baby girl on the table in front of him, there was the fist all clenched up as tightly as when she'd been born. And the doctor bent down and he peered at her and he said, And then he got out his old books and he started muttering to himself. He looked up his files and he checked his charts until after 15 minutes he looked up at them and said, "Sir, madam, there is nothing I can do with this child."
"What? Nothing, Doc? After all that money we just paid you? There is nothing I can do. I've never seen anything like it in all my life. I think she will always be like this."
"Oh, my crimes! I swear this is punishment for all that nicking I ever done."
And she said, "Calm down, for goodness sake. Look, we can go to Paris. They've got even better doctors there, French ones. I'm sure one of them will be able to do something." And he said, "Really?" And she said, "Yes, I'm sure of it. We'll go tomorrow." And so, they did. They set off for Dover, and there they paid a merchant to take them across to France in his ship. And when they got there, they bought another horse and trudged the rest of the way to Paris. Well, in Paris, the people were just as rich as in London, and even better dressed. And our two thieves had a wonderful time. They went through the busy streets, nicking and nicking to their heart's content, and before long, they had enough money to be able to afford 15 minutes of the time of the most expensive doctor in Paris. But it was the same story. The doctor took one look at the child, buried his nose in his books for 15 minutes, until at last he looked up at them and said,
"Madame, monsieur,"
which is French for madam and sir,
"there is nothing I can do with this child."
"What? Nothing, Doc? After all that money we just paid you? French money at that? There is nothing I can do. I've never seen this before. She will always look like this."
"Oh, my crimes, my crimes! My poor baby girl, my poor baby girl!"
"Shh! Calm down. We can go to Berlin."
Same story.
"Meine Damen und Herren, there is nothing I can do with this child. She will always look like this.
Oh, my crimes, my crimes!"
"Shh! Calm down. We can go to Rome."
Same story.
"Signor, signora, there is nothing I can do with this child. She will always look like this."
"Hey, signor doctor, we just invented spaghetti."
"Spaghetti? What is spaghetti? Oh, it's wonderful. It's long and white and stringy and, will you come see for yourself?
Oh, my crumbs, my crumbs.
Shh, calm down. We'll try somewhere else.
For the next 3 months, they trudged from one city to another, but not a single doctor could help them, until in the end, she said,
"This is useless. We should take her to Israel, to the Holy Land. I'm sure she'll be cured there."
And he said,
"No, I've had enough of this. I don't want to see another doctor as long as I live. We are going back home."
And so, back they went, over land and sea, to Bath. And when at last they arrived, it was 2 in the morning. She said,
"I'm exhausted. Will you put the baby to bed?"
He said,
"Yeah, don't worry, you go sleep. I'll put the baby to bed."
Did he put the baby to bed? No. He put the baby asleep in her blanket, inside an old sack, and he carried that sack on his back out into the street. If you see a man walking at 2 in the morning with an old sack on his back, you don't ask questions. And the master thief kept to the shadows, slipped through the darkness like only a thief can. Before long he came to the river, and he walked downriver for a time until he came to a tumble-down old hovel, inside of which there was a dim light burning. He knocked on the door, and it was answered by an old hag, all bent over with her face scrunched up, staring at him with her one eye, and she said,
"My boy, where have you been all this time?
Mum, I need your help."
"Oh, very nice. Leave your poor old mother to fend for herself and then come crawling back for favours."
"Mum, it's not for me I'm asking."
"Well, who else is there but me and you?"
In answer, the master thief opened the sack, and so gently that she did not stir from her sleep, he lifted his little baby out and unwrapped her blanket. And there was the fist still clenched up tight. There was the arm curled against the body as stiff as the day she'd been born.
"She's your grandchild, Mum. She's my daughter. I want her to be a thief like me. I've taken her to every doctor in the world, but nobody can do a thing for her. Can you help me? Please, Mum."
The old hag looked at the child for a time, and then she just smiled to herself and said,
"Well, I'll see what I can do, shall I?"
And she went over to the corner of the room and opened an old chest and started throwing its contents all over the floor until finally she found what she was looking for, a tiny piece of Roman gold. And she tied a thread around this piece of gold and hung it like a pendulum. And she went over to where the baby was lying, and she hung it above the baby's body. And very slowly, she began to spin it, and 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 spin it. And as she spun it ever faster and faster, the baby's little body began to twitch and tremble, her head, her legs, her tiny little feet twitching and trembling all by themselves. And when the old hag saw this, she just smiled to herself and span the gold ever faster and faster and faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until the baby's arm, that arm that had all the time been so curled up and stiff, began to shake and shake and shake and uncurl and uncurl and uncurl until it was perfectly straight. And then the fist began to open. First the thumb, and then the fingers, one by one by one by one. And when the master thief saw what was lying in the palm of that hand, at first he couldn't believe his own eyes. And then he began to laugh, and laugh, and laugh, and laugh. And his eyes began to fill with tears, and his heart began to swell with pride. The kind of pride a father feels for his daughter when he sees how special she really is. For there, softly resting in the palm of her hand, was the midwife's wedding ring, purest gold, with 8 tiny emeralds all the way round. This child was indeed the finest thief that the city of Bath would ever know.